Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. It could be a somber time for Tottenham, but it's not a somber time on this podcast because what's the point? You all right, Raj? How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Mate, yourself?
Yeah. I'm all right, but I'm not going to lie, right? Manchester City.
Yeah.
It got to the point where, so, you know, we were talking about a few months ago when we were sitting top of the table, and
fuck me, that does that feel a while ago now?
Doesn't it just? And every game, every single, so say like the Wolves game, for example, feels like a fucking catastrophe. It feels like you've had the wind knocked out of your sails. It's kind of because you're dropping points in the title race and all this type of thing, but when we sort of occupy the kind of place that we do at the moment, where there's less expectation, even though we're getting battered, I didn't sort of get really angry. I didn't have like a visceral foaming at the mouth reaction to that, and nor was I particularly sad or anything. I just felt a bit numb to it. And I'll tell you literally what happened is that the supermarket, our nearest supermarket, was going to close at 8 o'clock, I think it was. And right. So when the third goal went in, me and the missus just finished our cups of tea and we're like, let's just do the shopping now then, instead of Sunday morning, because I'm just not that arsed, you know? And it was like one of my mates put it in quite a good way. He was saying that, you know, when you watch Arsenal hoping that they're going to lose, and they start going like 2-3-0 up, and you think, ah, this isn't fun anymore, and just turn it off. That's actually how I felt with that Spurs game. And I know it probably makes me a plastic and a shit fan and stuff, but that's kind of where I'm at the moment. How did you feel about it?
Shall I tell you what? I'll sum it up in my own little story ways. I think it was 3-0 down. Our missus was doing the cooking, which is a rarity. And she needed my hand with something in the kitchen. And she knows that there's very few times in which I'll say no to her. But while I'm watching the football, is one of the few periods in time that she knows is fairly sacred. Not sacred as it used to be, but fairly. And I kind of came in and I was just all right. I was just myself. I was probably a bit quieter than usual and got on with what she wanted me to help her with. And then she kind of goes, oh, what's the score? And I went, oh, 3-0 down. She went, I've not heard you shouting or anything. And I just went, yeah, I kind of saw it coming sort of a thing. And the fact that she was like, oh, she knows that if I'm vocal while we're playing, it's either going incredibly well or incredibly badly. Or just Tottenham are playing, to be quite frank. But the fact that I just kind of sat there and watched it in silence pretty much shows you that I'm in a very similar sort of place. And I think it's unfair to kind of cast it as that's how I am entirely with Spurs, because it's not. But I think if you go back and listen to how we'd sort of previewed this game, we saw this coming. And if you're aware that you're about to have your ass handed to you and then it does transpire that way, then the shock's kind of gone out of it. The disappointment's kind of gone out of it. And you don't, you know, you're mentally prepared for it. So you're just kind of like, all right, we weren't expecting out from this, and it is what it is sort of a thing. And that might be negative. And you obviously, when it gets to the point where we actually start the game fairly well until the penalty, you're kind of like, okay, maybe we can do something. Harry Kane's actually hit a free kick here that looks somewhat on target. That's a rarity and a and a joy in itself. And, you know, had we been, I think I tweeted at halftime, you know, width of a goalpost, silly challenge, soft penalty, stronger wrist. It could be the other way around sort of a thing. And the fact that they just kind of, it went the other way in the second half just sort of confirmed what we thought. And the fact that the first half wasn't as bad as it might have been was a bonus, if anything. So it was. I feel it was almost par for the course, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit frustrating, though, isn't it? Like, that part of it, the starting well again, because I agree. I think we did start surprisingly well. We did manage to stifle City, and we also looked like we were more up for being, genuinely surprisingly, from what we've seen from Mourinho, we were actually playing fairly expansively in the opening stages. Like, we weren't being ultra-conservative, like people might say we would have been. And to be honest, in this case, with decent reason. But again, it just seemed to be like it's that one individual error. I mean, again, there's going to be conjecture. Was Højbjerg a bit clumsy? But, you know, I know it's one of those, and I know it's probably by letter of the law. Yes, it's a penalty. But again, it's one of those challenges where I think, like, does that level of contact in the box or not just pretty much constitute a goal? Because, you know, a lot of the time, Højbjerg's challenge on Gundogan, I'm not even sure if it'd be flagged for a free kick outside of the box. And I know I'm splitting hairs, because if you do boil it down, it is a penalty, really. But it's a minor thing, and it's one of those things that's just frustrating, because I don't really see it as an individual error of sorts, but I suppose Højbjerg was a bit clumsy, and the bloke's probably just knackered, to be honest, because he's played, because you are starting to see errors creep into Højbjerg's game now. And as much as I do have my agenda in saying that I don't rate him perhaps as highly as quite a few people do, and that's not to say I don't rate him at all, but I think he is knackered, and I think he's got a lot of pressure on him as one of our seemingly few competent players that we do have in the squad.
Yeah.
So it what I mean is it stands out a lot more when he does make an error. But it has been a couple of errors in subsequent games now for him. So that is always going to be a worry. I mean, there's not an awful lot to take from this. I mean, just to let everyone know, what we are going to do is, as we did a few months ago, we intend to go through basically all the players in the squad right now, because there has been a big conversation as to, does Jose Mourinho have the personnel or not? We've seen now a number of people make individual errors. There is this argument, but before we do that,
and we keep saying on the podcast as well, Jack, like, the squad needs reinvesting.
It does.
Good enough. It's not done this. We need that. But kind of back it up by going through man for man and proving why it's probably a good exercise to do.
Before we do that, though, I sort of wanted to know your thoughts on, because, you know, I do keep defaulting back to, and I'm probably, I mean, I've had a few people say to me, like, are you actually like pro Mourinho or not? Because I can't tell, because you seem to defend him on the pod, and it's not that I'm defending him as such. Like, I'm just trying to say what I think. Like, I keep on trying to split my emotional brain from it, because, to be honest, emotionally speaking, I am probably at the point where we could do away with him and I'd be all right with it. But as my, like, knee jerk to it, because I am a bit bored of it, I do think it's already getting a bit toxic, and I just can't really see a long-term glistening future with him at the helm.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I start to sort of break it down in terms of, like, has he been given a fair crack of the whip? Yeah, how many other managers would be afforded more time than this. And thus, if we are looking to build a project, if we are looking to do something bigger, something that we can all buy into, I don't think we can apply one rule to Mourinho and another. Yeah, we. I don't know. Maybe you can. I don't really get the point I'm making, but what I mean is, I think the point I'm trying to get to is that I'm not pro Mourinho. I'm not just trying to defend him for the sake of it, but I do still feel that a lot of people are just looking to blame him, and I think it would paper a lot of cracks. I think a lot of people are ignoring this idea, like ignoring at all the state that we were in under Pochettino with a lot of the same players.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I don't buy this idea. Like people are, because the kind of the in vogue thing at the moment now is saying that, well, everyone's letting Mourinho off the hook because they're blaming individual players, they're blaming personnel. But we were all gladly doing that when probably the same personnel were fucking up under Pochettino, when the same personnel, let's be honest, threw Pochettino under the bus at the end of his tenure.
Yeah, not purposefully, but tangentially.
I mean, yeah, perhaps, but Brighton wasn't a great reflection on the squad. Bayern Munich, meh, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There's instances there. And so I think if we're going to say that Pochettino suffered from personnel issues, then I don't think it's fair to say that, well, Mourinho should just coach what he has available to him. And that's kind of where I fall on it, because I think there's an awful lot of hypocrisy flying around to justify people's emotional responses to Mourinho, which I'm not going to police, but I think people should perhaps sometimes police themselves a bit. And that's what I'm trying to do to myself here. I mean, do you think he's more culpable than perhaps I, you know, should I slam him more or not, you know?
No, I think there's nothing wrong with having a bigger picture view of it. And I think it is oversimplistic to pin it on Mourinho, because if anyone thinks there's a magic bullet and we change managers tomorrow and maintain this same squad and it gets any better long term is foolish. And that's the same bad bet that Daniel Levy made when he swapped Pochettino for Mourinho, because he assumed the same and, you know, has been proven wrong. So I think there's a lot of baggage that comes with Mourinho because of where he's been before, and the fact that his personality is so big and his reputation is so easy to sort of have your preconceptions over. And I'm in a similar position to you, where there's things about him that I don't like, and but at the same time, I can't bring myself to fully blame him. And it's not a sort of a Sherwood sort of situation where I'm desperate for him to leave, because I don't understand or get what entirely that fixes right now. And he's got a long-term contract at the club, and he doesn't appear to be wanting out himself. He's not as toxic as he has been elsewhere quite yet. And he has, if anything, been a bit more flexible with our squad than maybe he has been previously. Because, you know, a Delhi-type thing and a Tangi before that, like, that just wouldn't have happened before. And even like there was reports he fell out with Serge Aurier the other week and he was still back in the team the next week. It's not as if people have been entirely ostracised for too long, and it's probably because he doesn't have the squad depth to be able to do it. But, you know, Daniel Levy seems to be managing Mourinho quite well, which is one thing, but the real issue is the long-term management of the squad. And we've talked about why before, and I think I did a bit of a thread on Twitter during the game at the weekend that kind of went, look, the whole vision for the club was we were supposed to get to the point that Pochettino got us to after the stadium was made, and he got us there years before, and he became a victim of his own success because Daniel Levy had poured resources and time into that stadium, not thinking that the squad would be requiring that level of investment yet or that level of competition. And because we'd got there and wanted to maintain it, but weren't quite fitting within what the fiscal plan was, the overall plan was for the team, it naturally became a frustration for Pochettino, because he's like, look, the only reason you're not doing that for me is because I've done a better job than you thought I was going to do. And we are sort of the other shoes dropped now. And I think that's the overall theme of the past 2 years, is the shoe dropping. And it's almost a perfect mirror image of the two most glorious, brilliant years we had under Pochettino, where there was zero investment made across four windows, compared to the 2 years we've had now where this squad is fucked. And it's like, we're going to need the similar amount of time to right those wrongs, because we made a big bet and it blew up in our face. Had we made that same bet and won the Champions League off the back of it, or snuck the league one season, then fine, fuck it, you've done your job. But we didn't. And now we are trophyless and with a squad that is largely unfit for purpose. So to expect anyone else to be doing any better than Mourinho is wrong. There might be one or two who would, but it's not going to be a league-winning team. It's not going to be a Champions League-winning team. It needs some real fixes, longer-term fixes doing to it. And it's, I mean, for this, a team as good as us, that's not going to come quickly and it's not going to come cheaply.
And this is the... Because we are, like I said, we are going to go through this man for man. But what, to your point there, what worries me about this now is, well, is coronavirus. And I mean, before, like, I do want to make clear, when we do talk about this type of thing, I totally understand we are talking about football. I get that it's a trivial thing. I also get that coronavirus has affected many of us in deeply personal and awful ways. We're looking at something that's killed a lot of people in this country alone. So I don't want to sound flippant or like I'm trivializing, and I mean this genuinely. Like, I, you know, everyone's lives are in turmoil. It's a sensitive subject, and it is ultimately football that we're talking about. We're talking about a business, but within the context, you know, coronavirus is probably like the worst thing as well that could have happened to Tottenham. It's in keeping with whatever we want to say, Spursy or cursed and everything like that. The fact that we have built a model of sustainability, profitability, of being able to compete at the highest level with the oil clubs, with the other mineral wealth stealing, hoarding clubs, is this idea that we will build this incredible event dome that can house, you know, concerts, Anthony Joshua fights, or not even Anthony Joshua, basically high tier fights, rugby, NFL, anything, showpiece matches, showpiece events, have a bustling, huge Premier League match day that is making the club close to £1 million a match day. Because the novelty was still there, right? You know, we barely even had a full... we haven't even had a full season in the brand new stadium yet. And I think we were regularly posting figures of upwards of 600k made on match days. And that's what the club had banked on. And obviously, coronavirus is the worst thing that could have happened to a club that is building a plan like we had done. So now it's almost like we've got this lovely big training stadium, you know, and a load of debt and a squad that is decaying, as you say, and needs investment. And I think we've done that to a degree. We've brought in Reguilón, even though it is, let's be honest, it's a...
glorified loan.
Well, yeah, it's a glorified loan, isn't it? It's Real Madrid ensuring that their asset actually gets played because we've put value behind it. And we've spent money on Lo Celso and Ndombele, fair enough. A couple of other players and Højbjerg, which was basically an exchange with Kyle Walker-Peters. And Matt Doherty, which was another, you know, arguably probably another brown paper bag job, but in the world of football transfers was a fairly, you know, lowbrow deal, whatever the financial playing field is at the moment. 12 to 15 mil bracket, I think, wasn't it, in the end?
Yeah, 12 to 15 mil is like your 1 to 5 mil used to be.
Yeah, and so, you know, we do need to rip up the squad and we do need to start again, but the thing that worries me is, yeah, we can get rid of Mourinho, but who do we bring in? Who do we bring in and say, you have to literally just coach these players that, again, that we already know are not fit for purpose. Yeah. A lot of these players are not fit for purpose. And
it's not happening.
I don't know. Even if you are Nagelsmann, who at the point of recording, there's a lot of actual chat coming around now that behind the scenes Spurs are sounding him out or have identified him as the person that, you know, they want to come in if Mourinho does go. But us and basically every other club in Europe, top club in Europe, wants that lad at the moment. So, you know, I don't think that's the world's... I don't think that's breaking news by any stretch of the imagination. But it's... I think that's what's adding to the numbness for me with Spurs at the moment, is I don't currently really see a way out of it. I don't see a bustling squad of young, untapped potential. I don't see a lot of promising youngsters coming through, as we sort of touched on last week. I'm not an expert in that field, obviously, but do you know what I mean? Like, you don't... there aren't a lot of people fighting for it. Should we just go in? Should we go into the squad and just sort of see what we can make of it?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. So, I mean, an interesting one, because this will probably be a good conversation, because there is a lot of chat around this man right now. Hugo Lloris. The... go on, you kick us off on this one, mate. What are your thoughts?
I think up until the past, month, he's been brilliant and probably one of our best players under Mourinho and refound his best form. And I think he's in a tough patch at the minute. And that's probably not helped by the fact that he doesn't have a settled defence in front of him. The defence has largely gone to shit. And that has consistently not brought the best out in him. So I think it's people were almost like waiting to be able to jump back on their same sort of tropes about how he's finished or whatever, but they've not been able to say that for a year or so because he hasn't been. So I think that's premature, but I do think given his age and you know, where he's at in his career, he's obviously coming towards the end of his peak. And that's fine, but we need to be planning long-term for him. I don't think we're going to go out tomorrow and immediately identify and purchase a better keeper than him right this very second, at least not for an affordable price. We're not going to go out and buy Oblak or anything.
Because what, that's 100 mil, you know?
At least, at the very least.
And what he's not going to come to us anyway.
No, he's that's a step. It's probably,
I'm agreeing with you, by the way. I'm not like arguing.
It's a sort of a parallel step, but it's not one that he's going to take when he could go. The thing that he wouldn't come to us for is the wages, because he can go somewhere else and get paid 10 times the amount of money he's going to ever get at Atletico. And, you know, fair play to him. He's the best goalkeeper in the world. He should. So, yeah, it's just unrealistic. We need a young up-and-comer or someone who's, you know, not been as hyped as they might have been, and identify that person to come in and really push Hugo over the next year or two and then take him over. And we almost had that person with Paulo Lopez, who's gone on to, where's he now, Roma, and he's brilliant.
Yeah.
So we've almost done that and then not followed through on it. So it's an odd one. I'm not ready to write him off, and I don't think I ever will be, because he's the best goalkeeper I've ever had in my lifetime at Spurs. But we just need to see where we go with him now.
I think that's because I do see I think there's a level of confirmation bias there in not with you with. Because one of the main things I've heard about him is that it's, yeah, okay, he's got his wrists and all this type of thing. His kicking's not great, but we've always sort of known that about him. He gets beaten at his near post. Even when he was in his pomp, he'd get beaten at his near post. It was kind of one of his failings, and I think it's something we've always acknowledged down the years, that Lloris's, say, his where he is fallible is the reason why he's Tottenham's goalkeeper and not Barcelona's. You know, there's a very, very fine margin as to being, you know, elite and really, really elite, you know, and Lloris has probably just been slightly outside of that, maybe even like on a silly level, but true for a goalkeeper, he's sort of fairly short. Do you know what I mean? There's lots of little things like that that have probably seen the fact that he's never gotten that astronomical move, but he has been without question the best bracket of goalkeeper Tottenham could have asked for across the last near decade now that we've had him. And yeah. I would happily kind of argue that with anybody. There are certain things that I do see, like criticisms, primarily that he doesn't come for crosses, really. He seems very hesitant to leave his line. He doesn't seem to be that commanding, oddly, for somebody who's a great captain and great at shouting at people and whatever. Yeah, like we've seen in All or Nothing, he doesn't recently seemed to have the best command of his box. Like a notable example of that is Liverpool's first goal, I think, against us, when it was just a horror show between him and Dyer in there. And I just frankly would expect better from someone like Lloris, you know. I think, you know, the City game, I think when you start nailing a keeper that hard for a penalty going in is, yeah, all right. He did get a hand to it, and you can say he's chocolate wristed or whatever, but you know,
he's done the hard work though, and we've seen him save loads of big penalties. So it's
exactly.
It's almost as if we know he's better than that and can do better than that. So that was the annoying part, is the fact that he's let himself down when.
I think it was the second or third. I can't remember which one it was that irritated me more. Like,
yeah,
but one of them. But I mean. My sort of thing is now, like where I stand on Lloris is, I get that he's not perfect, but I think you nail it in the respect that if we are going to replace Lloris with someone markedly better, off the peg, ready to go now, it's a sum of money that we don't have, or at least a sum of money that we need to invest more critically elsewhere. But goalkeeper is definitely one of those positions that we have neglected for far too long. I mean, Gazzaniga's done an all right job when he's been called upon, but you know, he was Southampton's third choice goalkeeper when we signed him, and he came in and kind of had a bit of a stormer for a couple of games, and everyone said, "Hang on, he's better than Lloris. He's ready to take over." And then I think the realization crept in that, oh no, you know, he's not all that. And Joe Hart, I mean,
there's a reason he's gone to Elche on loan.
Yeah, Joe Hart. I mean, I don't discount again. You know, I sort of will rally against the sniffiness behind the idea that big personalities in dressing rooms are a thing and they are of importance. So whether that means that Joe Hart is just a cheerleader or not, it's, you know, either way, I don't really care. We've got him and that's that. But he's not even, from what we've seen, he's not even good enough to be our second choice. So the fact that he is damning, is really, really damning of the club. And it does really make me question what they see in training, because
we needed a homegrown player for the quota, didn't we? And Harry likes playing cricket with him in the gym, so
you know, do we not even have a youth team keeper that
we've got that Alfie Whiteman that we've got Alfie Whiteman, haven't we, who came on for 2 minutes as like a competition winner in that Europa League game?
Really? Oh yeah, I remember that. And yeah, Joe Hart gave him a little pat on the back and all that sort of thing, didn't he?
But no idea if he's any good or not. But this might be a bit of confirmation bias, but when's the last time Spurs produced a goalkeeper of any note?
Ian Walker.
Was he actually ours?
I believe so. Yeah, and I think that'll be the last one. I'm just literally going to Google that now. But I think Ian Walker was. Yeah. So he's a Tottenham Academy boy, and yeah, he wasn't the world's best keeper, far from, but still, you know, he was a solid enough Premier League goalkeeper. So that's telling you something, right? That's the last keeper we've produced. But Lloris, yeah, I mean, where I am
he came into the team worryingly, Jack, over 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, let's actually put some investment into a proper understudy for Lloris, somebody that can learn from a World Cup winning captain goalkeeper who knows this club, knows the Premier League, is just a solid bloke, is our captain. Mm-hmm. There are few better candidates for a great potential new goalkeeper to learn from.
I know he had a bit of a shit game yesterday, but I like the kid at Leeds, Mellier. He's only 20 and he's French again, but if he had a couple of seasons as Hugo's number two, when he's 21, 22, he might be ready.
He is tardy.
He makes some outstanding saves. He's decent enough with his feet.
I like that Sanchez lad at Brighton as well.
Yeah, he seems okay.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those where you don't know what people are worth, and goalkeepers seem to just come in and out of fashion really quickly.
It's funny, it looks like the Goon has dropped a bollock on that Martinez. He actually looks like a solid keeper, which is funny. But anyway,
we almost need to repeat the trick we did with Lloris, with a really solid goalkeeper we know is good and seems to have just overstayed their time at a single club longer than they should have done, and then just snatch him up and give him a step up. And that just is somehow repeating that kind of a deal for not that much money would be ideal.
Yeah. I mean, you can't argue with that, can you? But, you know, no candidates really jump out for me, which is...
But moving on from goalkeepers is probably one of the hardest things to do in a team, especially a long-standing goalkeeper.
Well, because they're under such a lens as well. The thing is, the margin for error for keepers is minuscule. And
it's not just that, but, like, they're not going to then become a bench player happily unless they're like a Gigi Buffon and a genuine geriatric. Like, Hugo at this point is not going to happily in two seasons go sit on our bench. He'll want to go back to Nice, or he'll go to America, or he'll do something like that.
Yeah, and he absolutely can, and he, you know, would deserve to. That. Yeah. Number two in the squad. I'm doing it by squad number. Thank you, Wikipedia. Matt Doughty.
Number two by performance.
Well, Matt Doughty, he's another that doesn't really polarise opinion, to be honest. Most people think he's shite. early doors, my hope for him was that he was going to be as good as Andy Robertson, which, Christ, you know, I couldn't have been further wrong than that. I mean, I've seen a lot of takes at the moment saying that people want him gone, that they just think he's terrible, you think he's ghastly, which is hard to argue with. However, I would be really quick to point out the fact that the fella played 45 games last season for Wolves. That Wolves had a ridiculously long season.
They had the type of season we're having this season.
Yeah, and he's come back into that. And I kind of find our recruitment on that one laughable. The fact that we don't consider things like that when we're buying these players. Great, we've got a deal for him, but what we are seeing is maybe he is a player that could be looking better, but what use is that to us when he's been flogged after death and he just, again, as we said, I think, have said several times last week, this week already, not fit for purpose. Like the fact that he was supposed to be a more kind of solid, assured presence in the wake of Aurier being this like disaster, if you like, more often than not, I feel more reassured having Aurier in the squad than I do Doherty, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, Serge hasn't been perfect this season, we'll get on to him, but he's been a step up from where he's been before.
I mean, my sort of hope for Doherty really is that he could be maybe our, because I mean, basically, I think we're not going to get any resale value on Doherty. Nobody's even going to pay us what we've just shelled out for him, in my opinion. But
it depends.
If Burnley
or a West Brom or something, will have 15 million to throw at him. You know, Dyche loves his British players and all that sort of shit.
Well, he's Irish, though, isn't he? So there you go. It's a dodgy one, that mate. You're treading into a minefield there with that one, but I know your point. I get your point.
He's from around here.
Yeah.
He's white.
Yeah, there you go. I could happily see him being around the squad like a right-sided Ben Davies, but he's not good enough, is he? When all is said and done, he's not good enough. He's not. You're seeing it with Reguilón on the left. What a proper...
Yeah, what we need is a right-sided Reguilón, not a right-sided Ben Davies.
Yeah, and that's it, basically. Needs that, to me, is an urgent position that needs addressing right back.
Yeah, massively. We still haven't replaced Kyle Walker.
No, we haven't. And I think Trippier did a job, and I think people treated Trippier unfairly, but it is what it is. Yeah, well, I'd gladly have Trippier back now, but...
I don't think he'd come back. I think there was one or two bridges burnt in that relationship. Yeah. Although, Kieran, if you are coming back, give us a heads up so I can put a bet down, lad.
Reguilón, I mean, I don't think we need to say much on that. Lad's world-class, but he's probably going back to Madrid this summer or next.
Yeah, he'll be back at Madrid at some point. I don't know when that clause runs out, but they'd be daft not to take it up.
I mean, we are going through this by number, but I think it probably because I don't think we're going to spend much time on Reguilón because we just know he's world class. He makes the difference. We look like we're like a different team with him in there. But
yeah, the worst thing he's done since coming to the club was that fucking Christmas party. But other than that, he's been sound.
But Sessegnon has been tearing it up at Hoffenheim.
Has he? I've not heard anything. That's me not saying he hasn't. But I think I've once or twice I've actually Googled and searched in Twitter for his name and not really seen anything. So if he's doing well out there, then perfect.
But I'm not even sure he's playing as a full-back, left-back. I think he might be playing as a more advanced player. Perhaps anyone listening, if you have any more info on this, you could let us know because...
If you live in Hoffenheim.
Yeah, exactly. If you actually watch games and don't just pretend to watch them to look cool on Twitter, then get in touch, but yeah, maybe Sessegnon will be there to step into him. But wouldn't it have been nice again had we still got Sessegnon that him and Reguilón could be like playing alongside one another, vying for, I don't know, whatever. Toby Alderweireld, he was a notable absentee, wouldn't you say, from the City game? What do you make
well,
of it?
Well, he's not playing solidly. I don't know if his legs are doing it anymore because he's not been in the squad consistently for a long time. And I think we made the point before that Poch kind of moved on from him as well. And I think when he was talking about letting players go, I think Toby was one of the ones where he was going to... If he'd have had his choice, I think he would have done it the other way around. He'd have probably kept hold of Jan and let Toby go. But, you know, Jan seemed to have got really badly affected by that concussion and didn't have time to recover. And is now, you know, enjoying himself at Benfica. But Toby's, his decline has been sharp. He's making mistakes he wouldn't have done, you know, previously. Physically, he's not the same specimen. And occasionally he'll put in an old school Toby performance and you can like, shit, that was really good. But the fact that you can notice and visibly see the difference in performances is the worrying thing because he used to be so consistent and so reliable that it wasn't a rarity or it didn't stand out that he was brilliant. He was just brilliant and that's not the case anymore. So it's almost as if we've given him a big fat contract now, so he's going to be one of those players that if we do come to sell, Daniel's going to want a lot of money for him, and I'm not sure anyone is going to want to give that money for him. And we do have, this is a wider point, but we almost do need to have a look at the point at which we say goodbye to players. Because if you think at some of the players that we've still got on our books or had on our books that we could have sold and made a pretty penny out of and reinvested in a squad, there's a point where Danny Rose was being linked to a 50, 60 million pound moves away. Same with Toby, and we could have got that money for them and now we're going to likely lose them for nothing. And that's shit and it's a disappointment and it's... And did we really get anything out of them after that was worth more to us than maybe buying a better player or reinvesting in the squad? And if you have a look at... The best example of this probably, unfortunately, is Liverpool, who, you know, sell Coutinho and fucking reinvest the money and, you know, build a squad out of it and what have you. And they essentially did what we failed to with the Bale transfer when we bought 5-6 players out of it. But that is the best way of going. You kind of have to take money when it's on the table for some players. There's some players who are untouchable and you can't. Even if somebody offered us 200 million for Eric Kane, if you can keep him, you do.
Yeah.
And the same with Son. But there's some players that you kind of go... Christian Eriksen, if somebody came in a season before and where he's already making murmurs and fucking losing his hair all over again, oh, 60 million for Christian Eriksen, I would have gone, yeah, rather than selling him for, what, 20 million euro?
It's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, I am sort of at that point with Toby where... Even if we got offered like you say, to get the wages off the books, if we got offered 15, 20 mil from a Roma, someone like that, you just think you got to snap their hands off for it now and look at it. The point I want to make as well when I am sort of saying this is all in the context of what I started this discussion on, in that it's COVID, we're fucked financially, I think, and. Mm-hmm. If we're clearly operating on a basis, I think our January transfer window would be indicative of the fact that we ain't spending really until we're getting money in, you know? And if we are looking to generate funds to invest in, you know, younger players or players more fit for purpose, if we can get a value of 15, 20 mil plus whatever it is, 150k a week or whatever it was that Alderweireld was given off of the, you know, the team sheet, then maybe that's what we need to do now. I still think Percy, he's our best defender still despite the fact he's got all these flaws to him, and I think that's kind of damning of our defence because it is clearly the weakest part of our squad. Next player
it's
up.
Just, it's a complete and utter failure. Our defence from Reggie on the side is a failure.
Yeah. Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. I mean, I'll kick this one off in saying that he is obviously a fantastic player. And I think one of the things that stands out for me with him is that he seems to be just one of the few players in our squad that is actually functional. Like he's a functional player. You know what he's there to do, and he seems to know it himself. He has a clear idea of what his position is, what he's supposed to be doing, and has just a very strong basic skill set at his disposal. I think we've got some of the best players in the league on their day. I think, you know, when I think about players like Harry Kane, obviously, but when I think about some players more like Dele still, when I think about players like Son, I still think there is a, and this is partly by design from what Pochettino did, right? I think that a lot of these players, though, I sometimes wonder, what actually is their best position? Or do they even have a best position? Is the fact that they are so kind of malleable what made them so effective under Pochettino, but perhaps is seeing the team look less cohesive or have less of an identity or less of a fluency to it under a team like, under a manager like Mourinho, who favours a much more practical, functional style of football, shall we say. But I think Højbjerg's perfect for that. I think Højbjerg's perfect for the position that he occupies. My criticism, and this is just to go on to the criticism of him that I do have, because I don't want anyone to think I'm saying he's not a good player and that he isn't great. I think my first observation is that I think he stands out, and I think his qualities are perhaps overstated through a Tottenham lens because we've lacked a player in that position with his skill set for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at sort of the other teams that are up and around challenging for the title, and I sort of think, does he get into Leicester's team? Does he even get into United's team? Does he get into Chelsea's team? Does he get into Man City's team? And you don't, I mean, it's not really fair to do that, but I'm just saying on that sort of base level, that's kind of how I mark him, as in, like, if we are a team that wants to win the title, I think he's a player that is very good, very solid, but I don't think he's the absolute best that we can get. But again, nor was Jordan Henderson, and he kicked on levels and became integral to what Liverpool are doing. So I'm not by any means writing him off. That's kind of where I am on Højbjerg.
Yeah, he's functional, and he's really good at what he does, and we need him. And sometimes you just need... He might not be the right piece for other teams, but he's the right piece for ours right now, and that's probably a good thing. But you can have a sort of superstar defensive midfielder if you want, or you can have somebody who just mops up and does what they need to, and we don't really need that because our strengths lie elsewhere. If we had a functional defence behind him, as well as he has a decent player alongside him and in front of him, we're fine. Like, when the squad was actually functioning as it was just supposed to do at the start of the season, it was not something we noticed as much. And you kind of need players who are just happy to mop up and happy to do the dog work, while there are other players who do the more eye-catching shit. And he falls into that quite spectacularly. So it's just sort of, I have no problem with him. I think, yeah, he makes one or two rash challenges, but when he's the guy who's making 90% of the challenges, then he's going to get one or two wrong, and you can't hang him by that because he does more wrong than right.
Yeah, I agree.
Expecting these lads to be perfect is just...
Yeah.
Unreasonable.
Davinson Sanchez. Yeah. Go on, mate. Kick us off.
I still like Davinson. I think when we spoke about him last time, I've not changed my opinion. Like, he's one of those where if we let him go, I think he has the most potential to make us regret it, because I think he might kick on. And I think he's actually put in recently a few really good performances and shown the ability to have improved and been a bit better. So he's not the first person on my to sell list, but at the same time, he's probably got one of the largest tickets. So if we need to sell him to reinvest and bring in more players, then that makes sense as well.
I basically, you know, I mean, we can jump ahead and kind of compare them if you want, because, you know, I think it's relevant. I mean, I basically bracket him and Dyer the same, in so much as I think they're both solid until they're not. And, you know, and it's just you can't consistently have that. You can't build a defence around two players that just always have an error in them. I think, I don't know. I've not been particularly fond of Dav for quite some time, as you know. Like, I think he's... I don't think he reads the game particularly well, and I think he's hopeless in the air. But he does have a lot of positive attributes to him, and yeah, I mean, potentially he might go elsewhere and look decent. But as you quite rightly touch on, if we're looking at him and Dyer, Davinson Sanchez has a much higher resale value. Like, I think Davinson, we could probably get close to what we shelled out for him if we sort of, you know, we know what Levy can do. And I don't know if I'd be that sad to see him go. But I don't think he's hopeless. I mean, I've sort of in throwaway fashion sort of dug him out in the past in a, you know, in a sort of fairly overstated way, but I just don't feel comfortable in my gut ever when it's either him or it's Dyer, really. And they both have solid games in them. I mean, this is the thing. It's they're so emblematic of what Tottenham are right now, in that Davinson Sanchez looked actually great. And I think I texted you, didn't I, the other day, being like, Dav is actually, I hold my hands up, Dav is looking fantastic today. Mm-hmm. Let's hope he doesn't lose his arse in the second half. And then I think the next response after that was you sort of like quote replying to me with just lol after we saw him flap on his arse in front of Gundogan. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. It, sell him, you know, I would. And it's so frustrating to have be sat here now looking at the defence the way it was, when you think about that 16-17 team, when you think about Rose, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Walker, and you think about what we have now. It just feels very Kabul days, you know? That kind of, that sort of Tim Sherwood time again. Yeah, Christ. Son Heung-min, number 7 in the squad. I mean,
can you just like give him a new contract now and just stop it? Because the longer they go without giving him a new contract, the more likely his dad is to talk him into going elsewhere.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I thought with the release of like a Korean Twitter handle with the hashtag, with all that, that was like, okay, so the contract's done then. But I'm starting to worry now if that's more of an attempt to flatter him into staying or squeezing out the last bit of value that we have, in the sort of sense that we know he's going to go soon. And it has opened up my mind to, just to go on to what you were saying at the start of this conversation about cashing in on players whilst their value's high. Is there any argument to Bayern, whoever, come to us with 70, 80 mil for Son?
No.
We take it?
No.
But are we not looking at, if we're looking at a team that needs investment in a balanced way across the
squad? No, I'll tell you
why
not, because it's not just him that he is there to replace. As soon as one of Harry's ankles goes, he's the next one in line. Like, we don't have the ability to absorb his loss as well as a major injury.
But is there not a sort of idea that we're we're sort of playing to par in the respect that, like, we've got two world class. It's almost like the Keenan Berbatov days again. We're all, like, I almost feel like we're back there where it doesn't really matter that we've got these two incredible players because they're just always going to be completely undermined by what's behind them. So if we've got the value from one of them, and yeah, obviously it ended up being both of them in Keenan Berbatov's instance, but if we get the value from one of them to reinvest into a squad and actually have some real money, some serious money from selling one of them, that we could do and put that money to good use and evenly spread it across building a more balanced and stable squad.
No. Not for me.
I do, just to be honest, I don't want Son to go at all, and I don't want us to sell him. I'm just throwing it out there. Harry Winks, I think we spoke about him last week, but you know, to me, he's a player I'd entertain offers for. Like, I'd take money for him. I think he's a solid player. I think he's a good player, but I don't think he wants to be a squad player. I think he wants to start week in, week out, and I think he had the potential to do that, but he's not somebody who is good enough anymore. He's had, yeah, he's had a stunted development due to injuries and whatever at critical parts in his development, and he just ain't there anymore for me.
Pretty much.
Gareth Bale.
He seemed to remember who he was for 10 seconds at the weekend, did he?
Yeah, maybe.
Have you given up now? You were his staunchest defender. What's going on here?
I was, but it's because it's, you know, you can only do this one. I can only say what I've said so many times in that I just, you know, I can't be really asked for judging him sort of week by week. I just see it as, this was a deal done between Levy and Barnett, right? Gareth Bale, I feel, wants to be fit for Wales. He wants that to be his swan song, the Euros. He wants to have a good Euro for Wales. Doesn't trust his body, doesn't want to break down, doesn't want to push it too hard. I can imagine Barnett and Levy have had some sort of agreement in place where it suits all parties. It suits Gareth Bale to be closer to home base, to be in a less venomous atmosphere as he finds himself, as he found himself in at Madrid. And Spurs get, in the height of coronavirus, a pick-me-up, a marketable asset, something that helps bolster the global brand once again, bringing in a big player like Gareth Bale, on the understanding that he probably comes in for these high-ticket matches that we're seeing. League Cup final that we got coming up, FA Cup games. But it's obviously developed into one of those battlegrounds between the manager, who wants players that can actually help him week in, week out, and the chairman, who is looking at the bigger picture of the club, of the brand, of all the off-pitch stuff. And, you know, this is a story that's gone on under Pochettino's reign as well. You know, there's a lot of instances of that feeling that, yeah, I think Pochettino's as good as said many times that there's too much of an emphasis on what happens off the pitch versus what happens on the pitch, what constitutes success. I think there was a big, big fallout in the relationship between Pochettino and the club, from what I've heard, after the Champions League final, when he goes up to see a load of execs and everything celebrating the fact Spurs at least got to a Champions League final, and he's just lost the biggest game of his life and can't really see much to be happy about at that time. And people come to these things from different perspectives, don't they? But, you know, Gareth Bale as a week-in, week-out asset for Tottenham, I think that dream's steadily kind of dying, or has died a death, hasn't it?
Yeah, kind of, yeah, but more just sort of, at what point did you give up? Because you were, up until like a week or two ago, you were still defending him.
I haven't given up. I put it this way, right? It's 1-1 Carabao Cup final. I mean, fat chance of that, but 80th minute. Yeah. 1-1 Carabao Cup final. And you got Lucas and Bale warming up on the sideline. I still want Bale to come on for the last 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
That's completely what I want him for. But am I now looking at every Premier League match day thinking, oh, I wonder if Bale will start today? Not really.
Well, let's see. We've got that game in the Europa League on Thursday. He's bound to start that, you would think. Hope. And let's see what he does, because he, you know, this chatter around him might have given him a bit of kick up the arse. The fact that, you know, all that love and stuff has only got, you know, so much of an expiration date on it before people start to go, come on, Gareth, you've actually got to pull your finger out and play some football at some point. Maybe he does have something to say, and that'd be nice, but...
It doesn't ruin the legacy for me. I don't buy... All that shit can fuck off. The whole he's tarnishing his legacy. It's, nah, bollocks. Like, he's still a great player, and... I still maintain it. It was a fucking glorious day bringing him back. And I'm also happy for just like, you know, who knows what players like Harry Kane are talking to him about or taking from him in training, you know? So let's sort of bear that in mind as well. Next on the list is Harry Kane. I mean...
Just go past it, man. It's...
Yeah. you don't take 200 mil for him, though?
No, I don't even take 300. I don't think he's priceless to this club.
He is. I mean, we did sort of touch on last.
The only
week
thing is, the one thing I would say about this is, if there comes a point where he wants to leave to further his career, I don't begrudge him it for a second.
If it's Chelsea or someone like that, then I do.
Oh yeah, there's obvious. If he tries to. Fucking Sol Campbell's or something, then yeah, but if he's wanting to go to Madrid or Bayern or some shit like that, or even fucking City,
I'd take City as well.
With some at United or something, then you can't begrudge him of it, because he deserves to win some shit and play in a team that's gonna make him score 50 goals a year. Can you imagine if he had the supply that City would give him and stuff? The amount of tap-ins and shite that he'd just laugh.
Honestly, if he did go to... I was thinking about this on the weekend. If he was in that City side, I would honestly back him to slap 35 Premier League goals at least. Like, I honestly would. I would honestly back him to do that.
But the issue with that is that he probably wouldn't get to play every game, but...
Yeah.
We'd see.
I think as well, the whole kind of thing about his ankles is overstated. I think a bigger club would manage his time much better. And
yeah, I've said this before, but we've been entirely negligent with his career. The amount we play him and the amount we've run him into the ground. The fact that he's probably going to be on the bench on Thursday because we can't trust the second string enough to get through that tie and all that sort of bollocks. It's just, we've mismanaged that key asset quite spectacularly.
Eric Lamella. I've actually quite liked him playing in this sort of bizarro number 10-ish sort of role that he's been in.
Yeah.
And the thing that I think when I do watch Lamella roaming around there is, fuck me, if it was Jack Grealish that was in that position, we'd be looking like a phenomenal team. And that's not to... Take
if it
away
was Giovanni
from
Giovanni Lo Celso, Jack.
Well, maybe, but you know, I don't take away from what Lamella's doing, but we know his limitations, and I can't. The
limitations seem to be that he's made of fucking straw.
Well, yeah, this is it. You can't build around him, because you sort of think, well, he's going to be out for 3 months in the next couple of games, so it is what it is. But he definitely seems to be one of Mourinho's generals. I think Mourinho and slightly toxic fashion called him a proper man. Didn't he say something like, he's a proper man unlike some members in the team or something like that? It was a bit weird. It was a bit gammon, but, you know, it's Mourinho, isn't it? But Lamella, I mean, I think we know by now nobody's going to buy Lamella off of us, or at least for the money that we want for him. So he's just going to be someone that at some point or another will probably either be used as a make weight in a deal somewhere, or we'll end up loaning him out to a Spanish club or something like that. But
he'll probably go back to Argentina in a few years or something like that. You can see him doing that, or
maybe, yeah,
what have you. He's good on his day, and as long as we don't become over reliant on him and keep him fit, play him in, start him in Europa League games, have him in the odd Premier League game, rotate him here and there, he's fine to have in the team, because he's not as shit as people thought he was. He's not as, you know, consistently brilliant as maybe he should be, but he's not been terrible. He's still a good member of the squad. He seems happy to be there and contributes. He's got quality and usable quality.
Joe Hart, I mean, as we said already, cheerleader, not good enough.
I mean, you said that already, but it's pretty much the truth. He's really bad from range, and some of his fundamentals have just disappeared. He's going to start on Thursday, and I never feel confident with him in the team. Nah. So it's an odd one, that.
Joe Roden.
Seems good. He's very raw. He's going to need some coaching. He's not ready to come in and step in straight away. But in a few years, he might have something about him. He's very quick. He seems to read the game well. He makes a good tackle. He's not scared of putting his head anywhere. But he is still a bit thick, and he needs that sort of training out of him. He's made the odd mistake that he shouldn't have done. And we still got to remind ourselves that he's only just come up from the Championship. So, and it's not as if he's going to be a brilliant overnight. That's a long-term investment.
I'm sort of in a weird place where I wouldn't mind seeing, now that the Premier League is probably not as high on our list of priorities, should we say, as the Europa League should be now, potentially. I wouldn't mind seeing Roden and Tanganga given a few games together. See what they could be like as a partnership. Because I think Tanganga seems to keep getting marginalised to the right wing, and
or even fucking left back.
Yeah, and it's a bit odd, because
I want to play him in the middle.
Yeah, and because I really like Roden, and I agree with you. I think he's very raw, but his physicality is great. He's got a good presence, but he does seem to be perhaps not as switched on as he needs to be. Whereas someone like Tanganga, I look at consistently and I sort of think, he looks decent. So what is it that he's not doing in training, or what is it that Mourinho's not seeing in him to trust him more, to give him more of a chance? Because, and I know we're jumping ahead in the squad thing, but I think it's relevant to this conversation, really, that either we see Roden and Tanganga together, or we see Tanganga perhaps given some games in the middle alongside Dier or Sanchez or Toby Alderweireld. You know?
Yeah.
Next on the list, though, is Eric Dier. I mean, much what I said with Dav, you know, he's been given a new contract, and he has been solid at points this season. I think people have been pretty harsh on him, but he's still always got a mistake in him, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that Chelsea one was horrendous.
Yeah, he's in a position he shouldn't be in. He's not a starting central defender in a team that is supposed to be as good as we are, and that's not his fault. We mismanaged the early part of his career by playing him here, there and everywhere, and he seems to have turned his back on playing as a defensive midfielder, wanting to be a central defender, and he's not great at that. So he's not bad at it either. Like, if he turned out and said, yeah, I'm happy to play a bit part, then I'd happily have him as a bit part player. But he's been all right this season. He's not been shocking. He's had the odd deep, really decent game, but he's also made a few mistakes. He's not a great player in what is our weakest position of the field, and we have to be better than that to be the team we want to be. And it's harsh because I like him. He's a good lad, and he seems like he's means the best for the club. But at the same time, like, he wanted to go to Man United the other year, and had we let him go, he probably would have fucking fucked us off for Mourinho at that point. So
Yeah.
It's, you know, again, he's another player we could have got 50 fucking million for that we should have probably done, and we didn't. And, you know, that's the whole point, Jack, is you're asking, like, oh, shouldn't we have got 200 million for Harry Kane or 150 for Son and that, but we can add up to that amount with the four or five players we should have got 50, 60 for.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it is what it is. He's just, we kind of stuck with him and we shouldn't be. And he's stuck with us. And it's, nobody's particularly thrilled about it. And that's why the team is lethargic and shit, because everyone's kind of, it's a marriage of convenience across the entire field.
Mr. Sissoko, I mean, in short, I'm ready to end the Mr. Sissoko experiment now and just have him go on his way, to be honest.
Well, he's one of the ones where he was that terrible for that long and then had that period where he wasn't a complete fucking tire fire, that it was nice for a season or two, but now he's starting to regress again, and I don't want him to become the vilified figure he has been.
Exactly
from,
the same.
From saving it, kind of go out on a high now. We aren't going to get our 30 million back, but, you know, go somewhere else.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, you've still got value, and before we all turn on you.
We'd get 20 mil for him, you know, probably. Maybe. 15, 20 mil from someone.
West Brom. Big Sam would pay us for him.
Yeah, he's a Premier League footballer. Like, he is. That's the thing. Well, I mean, he literally is a Premier League footballer. Hot take, Jack.
He's not a Champions League footballer.
No, probably not. Giovanni Lo Celso. I mean, I don't know, mate.
Just get him fucking fit, mate. He's very good when he does play.
It's very good. I'm worried it's just the next Lamella on our hands. That's my thing. I'm not just making a lazy comparison, because
I think he's shown us a lot more. I think he's shown us more than Lamella ever did.
No, I'm not doing that to equate them in terms of their ability. I mean it in terms of he's the next Lamella, as in how often are we going to have to keep saying, right, he'll be great when he can get a run of games together, and he just seems to keep breaking down. And it you know, there's that worry about it that up until this point he didn't have a significant injury, and now we've suddenly realised that he's been playing on this hidden sort of injury that has been triggered or made worse by the fact he's been playing on it, which is exactly what happened with Lamella. So whether we've just basically fucked another player, that we can't, because I think the reason why I sound so negative about it is because it's just frustrating that we've got this player who has looked so good when he's come in and been available to us, but then just breaks down again and disappears seemingly with no kind of end in sight or strong idea of what's actually wrong with him and when he's going to be back, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, he's here, basically, isn't he? He's here to stay, so, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a big part of the squad as long as we get him fit, and he'll play in that weird Lamella hole that we've got, and that's nice. If we manage to find a base where we can have Kane, Son, Lo Celso, Ondombele and Højbjerg in the same team, then I think we'll be okay. It's that other position on the wing is a question, but otherwise that's not a bad place to be starting from.
Dele, I mean, we've spoken about him a lot, but
yeah, I just hope he don't go. I hope, like, the second half of the season he has a few games and recaptures the form and has a bit of a tangy and fights his way back into the team.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean,
because he's one of them where, sorry to jump in, but like when we were playing like Eriksen off the right and swapping around, if he's the other point of that front five, and we've got Lo Celso, Kane, Dele, Son and Ondombele just floating around and swapping around and all that sort of shit, then fuck me, that side of the field's fine. Just build us a new defence.
And I also feel like he's a player at the moment where because we've spoken about selling players when, you know, it's we can get good money for them learning from our past mistakes, but I don't think we'd get the money that he is still, in my opinion, worth at the moment.
No, if we sold him now, it'd be like when Chelsea sold Salah and De Bruyne.
Yeah, it would just be somebody would give us, we'd end up taking a paltry sort of 40 odd mil, and he's worth, in my opinion, he's still worth a lot more than that. So, you know.
Yes.
Steven Bergwijn, he's a player that's getting a lot of flack. I think he's a very talented player.
My dad hates him.
Really?
Yeah, my dad just doesn't understand what Steven Bergwijn's about.
I like him.
Every time Steven's playing, my dad will text me and just goes, what the fuck's Bergwijn doing? What is he for? What does he do?
I think he's decent in tight spaces. I think he's, and he works fucking hard for the team.
Yeah, he does. But that my fear with him is that I don't want him to become so functional he loses the spark.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's what Mourinho will do to him, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he needs to still, there needs to be some final product there as well. Like, he can track back, but he can also still be great going forward. We don't need him to become a second right back.
He's quite a shy lad, isn't he? And I wonder, like, if that plays into it. He seems quite timid and quite a gentle boy, really. So I wonder if he's just in his own head a bit, like,
possibly
with a few sort of high profile misses. But we saw it, you know, that finish against Man City in his debut, you know, is unbelievable. He's got it there. So
he's had a couple of other flashes as well since then. So he's clearly not shit.
No, I like him, and he's a young player, and he's still.
Oh, we don't give up on him yet.
Nah, not at all. I'm a big fan of his. Serge Aurier, I mean,
sell him if we get the money, because I don't think he's ever going to get any better than this. And if this is his peak level, it's still not what we need as our very best right back.
I think we get decent money for him as well.
Yeah.
He's a good player.
Someone will take him in Italy or France.
What I will give Aurier credit for as well is that he's obviously got some sort of fractured relationship with Mourinho, but it's obviously not so fractured to the point that he left at half time after which game was it? I can't remember which game it was in particular, but yeah, he left the stadium at half time after he got subbed off after some big falling out, missed the next game, but then was back in the team again after that and was one of our better players on the day. So he's, you know, I think, and he's obviously had a horrendous sort of personal circumstance that he's been dealing with as well, and to put in the sort of levels of performances that he has been this season, I think is credit to him. It's probably been his best season for Spurs, actually.
I mean, that's not hard, but
yeah, it's not hard. It's not hard. But like we've sort of said about, you know, kind of Dyer and with everyone else, that there's always an error there, isn't there? And that's kind of Tanganga. Yeah, we've sort of said I like him. I think he's good. I think let's just give him a chance in the middle, personally. Mm-hmm. But who knows? Lucas Moura.
If we can get some decent money for him, I'd let him go, because he's frustrating. He's an enigma. I think he's dining out on that Ajax game a bit now, because he's done not a lot since. He's the odd good sort of cameo, but is he happy just being a sub? Because that's the reason he came to us, was because he was a sub at PSG, and he's a sub here now. Like, he's playing in the early rounds of the FA Cup and the Carabao Cup, and he'll get your goals against shit, and you know, he'll have a smile on his face doing it. But do we rely on him in big games and stuff like that? I don't quite know. He's very odd. He doesn't seem to use his attributes
to
the best of his ability. Like, you are without question the fastest man on the pitch. Why the fuck are you never sprinting?
Yeah.
And if you are sprinting, why haven't you got the ball while you're doing it? Like, just run. I almost feel like I need to sit him down with, like, tape his eyes open and make him watch, like, an Aaron Lennon highlights reel and go, this is what the fuck you do. Run very fast at the people who aren't very fast and put the ball in dangerous areas. Like, it ain't hard, mate. This game is very simple when you want it to be. And for some reason, you're overcomplicating things. You're really quick. Be really quick.
Can't argue that. He works hard. That's what I give him. And I find him inoffensive. That's it, you know? But he's not...
I actually find his lack of intelligence somewhat offensive.
I know what you mean. He is, and I don't feel that he's ever really meshed with Son and Kane. I feel like he almost gets in their way a bit. I actually actively get the feeling that Kane doesn't really like playing alongside him.
He's a bit of a third wheel, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, Tanguy Ndombele, need we say anything other than build the fucking team around him?
Yeah, he's unreal that way.
You know, like... him, Harry Kane, Son.
He's the one, if we don't get into the Champions League this season, I'd be worried about. Because if somebody starts getting in his ear and telling him, you know, Barca can't afford him. To be honest, there's not an awful lot of teams that probably could afford him how much he's worth now, because we paid 65 for him and he's worth a lot more than
that. At least double that. Like, that's what you take for Tanguy Ndombele now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We price him out of the market.
Yeah.
Is what we have to do.
But build the fucking team around him. And he's another player that if Mourinho starts again, the fucking theatrics with him, get fucking Mourinho gone. Because, like, if I had to genuinely, if you have to choose between Tanguy Ndombele and Mourinho, you know, see you later, you big surly Nando's nonce. Ben Davies, but I mean, we don't need Ben. Is what he is. He's a good squad player. I think he's happy at Tottenham. I think he's solid enough. He's exactly what you want a squad option to be. And I think he's fine.
He's just picking up his wage, doing his job.
Yeah.
Filling it every now and then.
Yeah. I think you can criticise him for not giving us enough going forwards, but he seldom has a horror show at the back, you know?
No.
I don't think you could even call the errors that he does have from time to time a horror show either, you know?
Often when he is shit, it's when he's put in positions he shouldn't be in. If he's playing against Mo Salah or something like that, he shouldn't be in the team. Like, that's not his job to be in that game. So, yeah, it is what it is.
Alfie Whiteman, no fucking clue, really, do we? So, Carlos Vinicius, he's not staying. What's the point?
I've no idea. It's like he looks okay sometimes, and then he's just never given a chance. Like, I don't understand what's going on.
If he's poor in training or whatever, but Mourinho obviously don't fancy him. There's something not right there, is there?
But Mourinho apparently pushed for him. Like, I don't get it.
Maybe that's part of it, mate. Maybe there's some weird Mourinho feeling personally affronted by the whole thing element to this, you know.
He seems a bit soft mentally, like he seems too nice.
Maybe, yeah.
The team is largely too nice. Like, the reason why Højbjerg sucks out is because he's a bit of a prick.
Yeah.
Like, he will just go and kick someone if he needs to kick someone. He's got a bit of spike to him. He is, in Mourinho's infamous words, a bit of an intelligent cunt.
I do like it when you just see these random shots, because I've seen it from him in quite a few games. I've seen other people remark on it as well. Højbjerg has this weird habit when, you know, he tackles someone or the ball goes out of play, when he just like barks on the pitch. You sometimes see the camera going at him, he's just like, ah! Like sort of shouting at him, like it's almost like some kind of like Viking fucking head fuck thing that he tries to rattle other players by just shouting, but like these guttural sort of noises. I quite like that about him. But I mean, I think basically what we can see from our going through the squad is that we have a lot of players that we're largely unenthusiastic about, and
yep,
we would probably sell. And I don't think that just sacking Mourinho and bringing someone else in is going to make most of these players what they aren't already, because a lot of those listed that played under Pochettino, I would have probably viewed the same way under Pochettino.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
And obviously we got Sessegnon to come back, hopefully a good player. Juan Foyth, who I think is going to end up going to Villarreal, but he's not part of our plans, is he? Gazzaniga, again, not good enough.
I don't know, but our defence is that shit. I wouldn't say no to taking another five gamble at the minute. He's better than Dyer and fucking Toby, maybe, at the minute.
Oliver Skip, let's bring him in. Sell Winks, bring Skip in for that position next year, in my opinion. Can't be, you know, I don't think it can be much different to what Winks has given us. And if anything, there's a chance it'll be better. I mean, Cameron Carter-Vickers, let's be honest, he's...
We're just waiting for somebody to give us an actual fucking fee for him, I think.
And again, Jack Clark, another weird one. It was such... that the fact that Jack Clark was our first transfer in, what, three windows, we spent over £10 million on him. For a player that hasn't even represented...
Leeds fans England. Take the piss out of us for that, by the way.
We haven't even represented England at any youth level. I've never really seen him in terms of this big crop of, like, promising English youth. Like, I don't really get it. But the few times I have seen him, I'm like, there does seem to be a bit of a player there. So
it seems to be one where, like, what do you call it? Bielsa's recommended him or something like that. Because that's the only thing that makes sense. Yeah, it's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, because it is a really weird one. But I don't look at him and think, Christ, he looks like a disaster. I look at him and think, there seems to be something there, but who knows? You know, whether we'll ever see him or whether he'll just be a kind of, you know, Nkudu in G sort of signing that we've made that you don't really ever see again, then just get sort of shipped out the door, then...
That's who you want to be in comparison with, isn't it? Nkudu and G.
But that's sort of where I... Do you know what I mean? It's a similar...
No, I know what you're saying. I'm not having to go at you.
Yeah, you know.
Poor lad.
Yeah. I mean, who have we got next? We've got the Europa League, and then I think it's West Ham, isn't it? So,
if we finish below West Ham this season, it's not even... that. I imagine us finishing below West Ham will feel like as weird and disappointing as it must have done for Arsenal the first time they finished below us. Like, this isn't what should be happening here. And they're not... I don't understand why they're good. They're just the most vanilla team possible.
Suchek and Rice, I reckon, genuinely. I think it's just something as base as that because, you know, they've got a strong midfield core and their defence looks decent enough, you know? And everyone else is a bit shit. Look, we've seen Everton this weekend. I mean, I think... The main thing I think at the moment, though, in terms of like the talk about is Mourinho going to stay, is he going to go, we're still 3 points off of the top four with a game in hand. And I know there's a few other teams in a similar position to us, but we're not drastically falling by the wayside yet.
No.
Nobody's, other than
Manchester
City.
That says as much about everyone else.
Of course.
As it does.
That's what I mean, though, in terms of like this kind of narrative of like urgency of Mourinho has to go now. I still don't think he's going anywhere for quite some time. Lads. Like,
he's not.
You know? And I don't even buy this in the level that it's just because Levy's smitten with him. He just, I think, is here to stay. So try and get used to it for the time being. But it has, it's been a slightly longer pod today. We might do one before the West Ham game after the Europa League games. So
we'll see, yeah.
Yeah. I hope this hasn't been too depressing for everyone listening.
Well, we don't mean it to be. It's just, it is what it is.
It is true. I'm even having a swig of water. I don't know what relevance that has to anything whatsoever. Just to let you know what I was doing. Anyway, thank you for listening. Like, subscribe, all that muck. Do it.
Yeah, because... I think the one thing that kind of helps is if you share the link and sort of comment on the thing on the iTunes and stuff, then more people see it, because we haven't done this regularly for a while and we do it more regularly now and stuff. It's just less about finding new people because we're not really asked, but people who used to listen to us and presumed that we'd stop doing it, if they can be reminded that their favourite podcast is back, then that might be nice for them.
The best podcast is back.
Yeah, naturally.
Bye.
when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.